today is Kathleen Dollard. Kathleen, how are you?
I'm doing great. How about you this morning?
I'm a little tired.
It's early.
It's been a long week, really.
Okay.
So you're on your way to somewhere. You're on your way from somewhere.
Right? I am between user group talks. Okay. I spoke in Southfield, Michigan, night before last. Getting Geeky with the .NET Framework, and last night in Lansing on What's New in .NET 4.5, and I'm in Springfield tonight.
Springfield, Illinois.
So I got about 8 hours to drive here as soon as I get organized and we finish up, and then I'll be in Springfield, and there we're meeting in a bar.
You were in Vermont on Monday.
And I was in Vermont a week ago Monday.
A week ago Monday.
And in the middle of May, I'm doing two talks in May and one in June. So maybe two in June. So we'll see how that works out. I'm going to hopefully visit MAD, the Norfolk conference.
Oh, the MAD Expo conference.
I'm going to try to visit that. I don't know if I'm speaking yet because I'm really dropped in at the last minute and I'm like, maybe I'll be there and really flaky. And so I don't know if I'm actually going to be talking, but I'm hoping to make it over there. And somebody talk to me.
I'll talk to those guys. That's some of the few people that I actually might know better than you do.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. I don't know these people. So anyway, it's fun. I'm living on the road these days and it's really fun.
All right. I saw both your talks in Michigan. Mm-hmm. Great stuff. I learned a lot.
Okay.
Let's pick a little part of that.
it's a lot.
Most of it was around .NET and Visual Studio. What are some of the cool things in .NET? You brought a lot of this out. The cool things in .NET that a lot of people aren't using, that a lot of people just aren't aware of.
So there's tons of things both in .NET and Visual Studio. So I'm going to switch it over to Visual Studio because I'm doing some foresight videos on tips and tricks for Visual Studio, which is a great format for that. I'm really excited to get out of the format. There's some wonderful things other people have done in books and all, and I definitely encourage people to look at like Sarah Ford's and Naim. I can't remember Naim's last name. I'm sorry. Their books are fantastic, but I think that a video format is going to be really great.
I'm a Pluralsight fan myself.
They're great. So anyway, in Visual Studio, one of the things most people overlook is the regex search and replace.
Okay.
And the reason they overlook it is because they say, oh, it's regex. It's really hard.
Yeah, it's intimidating.
They've really made it pretty easy.
Okay.
One of the tricks is over on the right side, there's this little button. And we kind of forget that those buttons on the right sometimes do fun stuff. And it brings up access to the regex that's inside Visual Studio 2000, the initial through 2010. All of those use the same regex, which is not a normal regex. It has got some differences. And then in Visual Studio 11, the next version, we get a normal regex. So it changes by changing the way the regex works. But because what you're doing is very simple regex, you're normally doing a dot, which means any character, and a star, which means any number of times.
Right.
So for just one quick example, if you're trying to find a bunch of places that maybe you have a method name and a parens, and then you've got some parameters and you want to change something in the parameters, or that name method name is very, very common and is appearing in a bunch of other contexts.
Okay.
So in both of those, what you can do is you can actually write a quick little regex, which says, I don't care what's inside the parens. I want you to change it, finding, you know, regardless of what's inside the parens. It's just one example. And you can, once you do that, then you're replacing, you know, that whole block. If you want to go deeper, you do have the full, you know, parameterized regex. You can, you know, switch around parameters. You can do really exotic things. But that does take a little more regex knowledge.
Sure.
But what most people would do with regex, you could learn in 5 minutes.
Okay.
You just have to go in there and explore. It's pretty good stuff.
I inherit a lot of code that's been written by a lot of people. Some of those variable names are inconsistently named.
That's
but
great.
But a last name, for example, it's probably going to have an L in it. It's probably going to have an N in it. I can find all the places where I have that pattern.
Right, and it can either be a replace or not. And also, that's the way that you get into being able to replace the special characters like tabs. So if you've ever struggled with that, you want to put a new line character in or a tab character in, then go to regex, and that actually does make the replace field also a regex field.
Very cool.
So yeah, there's cool stuff in there. That's fun.
Next one.
There's cut and paste people overlook. So the easy one that people overlook is the clipboard ring. And Visual Studio 2010, it's a little flaky for some people, and nobody's gotten the bottom of the bug yet.
Okay.
But what the clipboard ring means is that when you paste something, you do Control V.
Right.
And if you want to cycle through what you have been cutting or copying, that every time you cut or copy something, it goes into the clipboard ring. And if you want to cycle through that, you use Control Shift V.
Okay. Ah, okay.
And what that allows you to do, if you've ever copied and you went to a lot of trouble to mark something, get exactly what you wanted to copy.
Accidentally copy something else.
And then you go over to where you're going to paste it, and the first thing you do is something like get rid of a line you don't want. So you do like a Control L to cut a line, and all of a sudden, you just wiped out that Control V, and you go, oh man, I got to go back and do all that work again.
Yep.
Well, Control-Shift-V should cycle through the clipboard ring. If it's not working for you, it means you're running into this intermittent bug that Visual Studio 2010 has. But it should work. And then
is that a Visual Studio thing, or is that a Windows thing? Because I know the Office products also have that. They don't have the same the shortcut key, but they do allow you to see what's on your clipboard.
Well, the idea, it goes across different things. As far as I know, that's just something each individual does. I don't know that there's a shared.
So if I copied like from Notepad into Visual Studio, that might not work.
It might not work. Okay. I don't think it'll work. I think that's an application-specific clipboard ring, but I don't know that for sure. Another one is that you can drag code into the toolbox and drag it back out.
Yeah, I've done that.
So that's one a lot
that's
of people.
That's nice for demos.
And when you're doing that, the toolbox can be arranged so you can add a new group in the toolbox, which is just your junk, you know, so you can separate that out from everything else. So, yeah, that's one that's a lot of people overlook. And another one is that some people don't use XML IntelliSense when they're writing XML. So one way I like to get people to think about what they could do is if you work with WebConfig, you may know that you get pretty good IntelliSense in WebConfig.
Yep.
Well, that all comes from the XML IntelliSense. All that requires is that you create a schema.
Right.
So if you've got a schema, you're going to get XML IntelliSense and completion based on your schema. And you go, oh, yeah, but that's a lot of work. I don't want to write
like
a schema. Well, even if you're not a VB coder, go open up VB and use XML to schema because VB has an ability to just give it a piece of XML, give it a lot of XML, give it 14 files and 3 fragments and something else, and it'll figure out the schema for you.
Wait a minute. So I'm not a VB guy. You're saying that in VB there's something... There's a feature that C# doesn't have.
Oh, yes, there's a few.
Okay. All right. So I should stop looking down on those VB people?
We keep getting the C#. I do both, okay? We keep getting the C# features moved into VB, but we're forgetting to move all the VB features into C#.
Explain that feature to me. Sounds pretty cool. You're in VB, but you're working with XML?
So I don't think
VB has XML literals.
And this is not VB XML literals.
That's something different.
It's something that was put in to help with that. But it's a different feature. So what you can do is create an XML file, whatever you're going to do. So you've got your target XML, the way you want it to look. And you can have as many files and as many fragments as you want to. And then you go into Visual Basic and you say add a new item.
Uh-huh.
And you go into data, which is where the XML features are. And there'll be XML schema, which is exactly like C#. And then XML2 schema.
Okay.
And XML2 schema brings up a new dialog and says, give me the sources. Give me the XML sources I need to work with.
Oh, that's very cool.
And so you can give it file names, you can give it fragments, you can give it, you just give it the XML. And it says, okay, I'll figure it out. Now, it might not be exactly what you want, but it's a good start.
That's
and then you can say, oh, that's wrong and that's wrong, and fix it.
I'm getting something back. I used to be a BizTalk guy.
Mm-hmm.
I spent about 2 years doing nothing but BizTalk.
Okay.
And that has that feature in it. But now, nobody that's not a BizTalk guy would ever install BizTalk on their laptop. It's a big thing to install.
Yes.
But I would use that feature to get
there.
There.
And
I lost it when I moved on to it.
And you don't have to, and you don't have to write any VB code.
Right.
Because all you have to do is do this and then copy back to C# project. So if you're like, oh, I don't do VB, that's okay. Because you're just going to copy back.
I was kidding about looking down at VB programs.
Well, everybody's got their things. VB's been a great influence in the history of application development. So, it's had a great influence on C# coders, even if they don't want to admit it. So.
Yeah, I agree. So let's talk about MEF.
Yeah.
Because MEF is another feature that people, I don't think you can call it a feature, another part of .NET, part of Visual Studio.
Right.
That's people just aren't aware of, I think.
Right. And it has a really weird name, and I don't think it helps it, because the name is the Managed Extensibility Framework. And so you'd have this thought that maybe it's about extensibility. And it is. It is a way to extend your application. But the way we extend applications today is through dependency injection and inversion control containers. That's the pattern.
Right.
Now, there are some fantastic inversion control containers that do things MEF doesn't do. So I'm not trying to, go into inversion control wars. But the MEF does what most people need, especially in version 2, which comes out with .NET 4.5. One of the things I showed at last night's talk is my slide about all the numbers. And right now, in upcoming releases, we have a 1.7, a 2, a 3, a 4, a 5, a 6. I think we're missing 7 and 8, a 9, a 10, and 11. So, you know, if you're crazy, if you're going crazy about the version numbers, it's because they're insane.
Yeah.
But MEF 2 fills the two big holes. Well, there's kind of a third one, but the two really big holes, which is that there's something called resolution of open generics. And what that means is that I can write a single class that is going to fulfill requests, and that class can be a generic class and can fulfill requests with a whole bunch of generic arguments.
Okay.
So let me just back up just 1 minute and say that the overall goal of dependency injection is to take one part of your application and have it say, I need something, and another part of your application says, I can give you that, and we have a container that meets them up.
Okay.
Now that's the quick version, and if you know, I know you work with this, but if you talk to anybody who doesn't have an image of that, you can just think a dictionary. It's good enough to get your head around the simplest thinking around IOC containers.
The idea is you're not going to bind your code to a concrete implementation.
And you do no binding. There's no references.
Yeah, it's all assembled at runtime.
Exactly. And it's done based on interfaces. So you have references to interfaces, and then something comes in and fills that interface that you've never seen before.
Right.
And so it's... Generics does a different way, kind of the same thing, but it's the same thing where your code is doing something specific at runtime based on what you're asking at runtime. So what we get in MEF is the resolution of open generics so that I can do this, I can do this for any generic argument you send me. And we couldn't do that in MEF 1.
Okay.
So that's huge. And the second big thing is something called inference, and I'll just shorten that down to say that some people that work with IOC containers complain a lot about the fact that MEF 1 is attribute-based, so you stick attributes throughout your code. You don't need to do that at all, and there's a good chance you won't in MEF 2. You can, for example, say, take everything that implements this interface and assume that I want to export it or make it available to fulfill that interface.
Okay.
That you can just write one line of code and do that.
Okay.
So that it's still not configuration based as its first choice, and I think that's a benefit. But some people are going to go, oh no, we really like configuration.
Oh, so you think the option you can do it one way?
You can't. Yeah. There's a lot of options now. So that, and the final thing that's doing is it's making its diagnostics better. The whole dependency injection world, all of that, your Achilles heel is debugging.
Sure. Anything loosely coupled, it's like that.
Yeah. And so there's one particular thing that we get, and it's got a great name. It's called disable silent rejection. So before, you could have a silent rejection. And you don't want a silent rejection.
I've had a lot of silent rejection in my life. I'd like to see that.
So now you can turn off silent rejection. And I won't go into what silent rejection is, but it was a huge step forward. That's a good thing.
So that means basically the rejection will still take place, but at least you'd know about it.
Exactly. So there were certain cases where you could have a failure and you would get the problem that you would see, the symptom, which is what you're going to look at, would be at a very different point than where the problem was.
Right.
And when we're looking at debugging in general, I know I've taught debugging for a while, but one of the things that makes debugging hard is to have separation in time or space. And for us, space is lines of code.
Right.
If you have separation in time or space between where the symptom is and the true problem is, that makes debugging very, very hard. And what disable silent rejection does is it closes that gap.
Okay, so just the big problem, or the hardest part of MEF is making sure that your imports match your exports, that what I expect to get, there is really something there to fulfill that contract. And if it's not there, or if something unexpected is there, then...
Or there's two of them.
Or there's two of them. Whatever. If what you expect to be there isn't something is not there or is different...
That's right.
Then you may not see the problem there, but later on when you go to use that thing...
Right.
It's gone. It's
exactly.
You get a null write-up exception, for example.
Exactly. That's exactly the kind of thing that you can get, or some other part can fail because of the way it's created versus the way this other one was created. And it's a real headache in MEF 1.0. So those people that are using it will understand that, and the rest of people just get to know they can turn it on or off and they can have the behavior they want. Because if somebody gives you a part and you're allowing people to bring parts into your application like Visual Studio does, then you don't want your application to crash because somebody did something wrong in a part that that it's been brought in beyond your control.
Yep.
So in that case, you don't want your application to crash. There's some very good reasons to have silent rejection turned on, but it makes debugging a nightmare. And so for most of us, we want it turned off.
Okay. Anything else?
I don't know. I could talk all day. I'm getting on the road, though.
Let's get you on the road, then. Catherine, thank you so much.
Okay, yeah. It was great.
And good luck with your, in fact, your company is called what?
Crystal Meth Lab.
Crystal Meth.
M-E-F.
Lab.
Meth. Crystal Meth Lab, yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. Have a good day. I think this is kind of sad to admit, but I'm going to admit that technology has brought me an awful lot of my friends. So this is a big hello to all those folks out there that I know because of this great industry that I have the opportunity to work in.